Welcome to the Samuel Andreev podcast. My guest today is the Ukrainian pianist Dina Pisarenko. Dina Pisarenko is certainly one of the most remarkable musicians that I have had the honor of working with, and we're going to talk today about music in Ukraine. First, I'm going to read Dina's biography, and then we're going to get into a discussion about her teachers, what she learned from them, what the situation is like for musicians in Ukraine, and many other topics. Dina Pisarenko was born in Donetsk, Ukraine. She's a pianist and an accompanist at the National Tchaikovsky Music Academy of Ukraine, soloist of the Ucho Ensemble Kyiv, and a laureate of the Levko Rivatsky Award in 2014, as well as the 6th International Prokofiev Competition in St. Petersburg in 2013. While still studying at the Donetsk Specialized Music School for Gifted Children, Dina was twice a laureate of the International Competition in Memory of Vladimir Horovitz in Kyiv. She graduated with honors from the Prokofiev Donetsk State Music Academy in 2009, where she studied with Professor Lydia Ademenko. Eager to embrace various styles in her repertoire, Dina devotes particular attention to contemporary music. Since 2006, she has premiered a number of pieces by living composers, performing at important Ukrainian festivals such as Kyiv Music Fest, Gogol Fest, Donbass Modern Music Academy, etc. Together with Ucho Ensemble Kyiv, under the baton of Luigi Gaggero, she's given the Ukrainian premieres of several important pieces of the 20th and 21st centuries, including A Propos du Concert de la Semaine Dernière by myself, Quasi una Fantasia by Gyorgy Kotag, Kammerkonzert by Klaus-Stefan Mankoff, and the Piano Concerto of Gyorgy Ligeti. Dina participated in a conducting masterclass held by Maestro Luigi Gaggero with the Ucho Ensemble Kyiv, making her debut as a conductor with Integrale by Edgard Varèse in 2016 and Epicycle by Yanis Xenakis in 2018. Since 2009, Dina Pisarenko has accompanied the class of Professor Valery Ivko, one of the founders of the Ukrainian Domra School. In the 2013 to 2014 season, she was accompanist at the Anatoly Solovyanenko Donetsk Opera and Ballet Theatre. She has also participated as a répétiteur in three operas staged at the National Opera of Ukraine, produced by Ucho Agency and conducted by Luigi Gaggero. Limbus Limbo by Stefano Gevasoni, Pane Sali Sabbia by Carmine Emanuele Cella, and Luci Mie Traditrici by Salvatore Sciarrino in 2018.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Dina, for agreeing to appear on the podcast. It's very good to see you.
Thank you for inviting me, and I'm glad to see and to hear you too.
So we're going to talk today about music in Ukraine. Now, that's a topic that I'm particularly interested in for a number of reasons. I've been to Kyiv twice. I've had the immense honor of recording a CD with you entitled Iridescent Notation, on which you appeared as piano soloist on several of the pieces, and we've had the occasion to work together on several times. And Kyiv is a city that is very close to my heart, certainly, and in which, for me as a composer, I've been able to have working conditions that are unlike any that I've ever had. It is, of course, with a great deal of sadness that that I witnessed the events that are unfolding in Ukraine today. Did you ever expect that something like this would happen?
No. I've never expected this. No one expected. No one from musicians.
It was a terrible shock to the system. Of course, in February, there were concerns that something might happen, but yeah. Nobody was, of course, sure what would end up happening.
Speaking about the current situation, which is a war. So, yes, from one side, no one expected. From the other side, yes, we expected seeing the news, knowing the situation. But, I mean, one thing is to read the news, and the other thing is your inner knowledge and something inside you. So you never expect the worst to happen. And the war is there not since February, but since 2014, when Russia occupied my hometown, actually, Donetsk, and another city in the east of Ukraine, Luhansk, and Crimea as well. So this has started long before.
Yeah, and this is, of course, not a new situation, although it's a dramatic escalation, and it's one that none of us were expecting. We should mention that I was, in fact, intending to go to Kyiv in March for a project with the Kyiv Symphony Orchestra, in which you would have appeared. And instead of meeting over there and working on this beautiful project that we spent years putting together, together with Luigi, instead it's canceled, and we have no idea, of course, when it's going to be possible to do it again. So that is, of course, a very sad thing. What I'd like to do, Dina, is to talk a little bit about your training as a musician and your early years learning to be a performer in Ukraine, and what that was like. And I think that's something that, for people who don't have direct experience with Ukraine, it's difficult to understand what the musical life is like there. It's quite different than the way musical life is organized in Western European countries. Maybe we could start there. Could you tell us a little bit about how you began your training?
Thank you for this question. And yes, I began my training quite soon because I was born in a musical family. So I started to play piano quite soon and appeared on stage also quite soon, won competitions for children and so on. And yes, so that was my life since always. I'm grateful really to you for this occasion to speak, and I would like to speak about my teacher, Valery Ivko, whom I met already being quite adult, but the person who really changed my life, and each and every of us, his students, Valery Ivko, Valery Nikitich. First, I heard his orchestra back in, I think, 2008 or 2009. And before our Zoom meeting, I was just re-listening to the recordings because I love them. Valery Nikitich passed away 10 days ago. And it's for us enormous loss and pain. It is inside us, the love and the knowledge that he gave us and the passion. So the impressions from the concerts, from the first concerts that I heard, it was the words that I can choose best are the miracle and the spell of a time which of a very special space and time which is above everyday life. They were playing Vivaldi and Mozart. And the orchestra is called Ligdom, which is translated into English like Face of Domra. And Domra is a Ukrainian instrument, so speaking about Ukrainian music, which its history goes back to 12th century, to the epoch of Kievan Rus. Then there was a period, like a gap in its history, because it was prohibited and also physically destroyed by Russian Empire, because it was the instrument used by, you know, street musicians and these artists who might contribute to social criticism and this thing. So it was destroyed. And then it was reconstructed in 20th century. And I will send you the link to read about the instrument. So this was the orchestra. This is the orchestra made up totally of his students and students of his students. You know, these concerts were expected by everyone, like really a fresh air and a magic. I can't choose a better word than a magic, because listening to this music, you understood that it is true and that there is something higher. So that there is a higher sense being transmitted. And for us, our teacher was and is and will always be the incarnation of values and of qualities that every human being and every musician might aspire for, might want to be. So really the truth, the devotion, 100, 200, 2000% devotion to the music, honor and honesty. So I have heard his orchestra. I was totally in love with what they do and how they do, and also with all the people, all the musicians who were playing, because they were so beautiful, you know. So with something which is in the eyes, you know, something light, something love for the music and a true love to what you do. I don't know if I explained myself in English. So
absolutely. Well,
something that you feel and perceive really. So then I asked him if I might become a pianist of his class, and shortly afterwards I was taken. He took me, Valery Nikitich took me to his class. So I worked basically until this December, so for more than 10 years. So one part of activity was this orchestra, with which I also had several occasions to play. They played a repertoire from Vivaldi to Lutoslavsky and to modern Ukrainian music. So enormous repertoire. Valery Nikitich held the lectures. It was every Friday at 2 o'clock lectures, which I don't know how to say in English, like music interpretation or the methodic of teaching music. Everyone was coming even with their own chairs to these lectures, not only his students, but also violinists, double bass players, whatever, singers, pianists like me, composers. Everyone was there to hear these lectures because they were not only about music, but they were basically about the place of music in life and about what it is. It was given to us the meaning of what we do. Might seem obvious, but it is not obvious that what you do makes sense and what you do is good, is true, and is high. So after these lectures, we went away with the feeling that, yeah, that there is a sense and there is a meaning. The center of his school was centered around time, musical time, but he encircled this theory in speaking about really also physics, about philosophy, quoting Plato and Santo Agostino and Einstein and Hubble telescope, so whatever. So he really gave us the global picture. But there was more about it, because it was not only the real knowledge that was transmitted, but also the way how it was transmitted to us.
I'm glad you mentioned all of that, because what I get from your description is that this teaching went far beyond matters of technique. In fact, yeah. you didn't even mention the word technique. What you talked about was the meaning. The meaning yeah. of the music and the spiritual depth of it also, and the ideas that might connect with it, and the humanity of it. Yeah. And to emphasize that as a teacher, I think, is a very rare and special thing. Because it's easier, quite frankly, to talk about technique, isn't it? I mean, you know, technique is something that you can develop a method for, and you can describe it in, you know, objective terms. But the things that you're describing can't be described in objective terms. So that sounds like a tremendous gift to have had a teacher like that.
Yes. So the second trait was, so first that I wanted to speak about was the orchestra, and the second, these lectures, and then also the lessons with the students. And then, so going on speaking about meaning, yes, indeed, he was speaking about, never about technique, but pointing an ideal to strive for and demanding from a student to do their best and never giving up, never surrendering without achieving a what he wanted from a student and what he wanted from the music, of how he wanted to hear the music. But there is a difference, because there can be different, I understood that much later. There can be difference in why you do this or that. And what I understood later, that his being demanding was actually a manifestation of deepest respect to a student and of to a person as a human being, because the motivation of it was the belief, and also he was saying that always, the belief of whatever is there of divine in a human being. So also he repeated to us often that we are using our brain not on 100%, you know, so he really wanted us to pull out whatever there is of divine in a human being. So this was the ultimate sense of what we are doing, actually.
That reminds me actually of a quote from Igor Stravinsky, who was asked in one of the conversation books with Robert Kraft what his personal definition of the word technique was. Mm-hmm. And Stravinsky's response, I think, was fantastic. He said, technique is the whole person. It's everything. It's what you are as a person. Everything you are as a person goes into your technique. It's certainly not a matter of scales and arpeggios and so on, and learning how to write chorales and correct counterpoint and all of that. It's the complete human being, with all of your forces brought together in service of the musical idea.
Yeah. Yes. So the lesson with Valery Nikitich was really something which breathes life into the piece of music, and which really made you understand that music is highest form of human activity. But I mean, it's not mere words, but you could feel it by every word, by every gesture, by in his eyes. So that's it.
Yes, I think that's an extremely noble thing to pursue. Absolutely. It's hard to think of a higher thing that you could do with your life, actually, than to engage in a pursuit like that. Mm-hmm. So you studied then for 10 years?
Actually, no. I've been an accompanist in his class of Domra.
I see.
Yeah, because in Ukraine, every instrument, a class of instrument which is not piano, but like violin, wind instruments, brass instruments, they always have an accompanist, always have a pianist, which is always there. So I understand.
You mentioned that you worked together on a very broad range of repertoire, including, of course, classical music, but also Lutoslavsky and contemporary Ukrainian composers. So I'm really curious to know, what was your first contact with 20th and 21st century music like? And how was it presented to you when you first started looking at these scores? I mean, was it presented as just something normal, or were you given sort of a speech as to, you know, how to approach the music, how to understand it, or was it just, you know, here's a piece of music and you have to do something with it?
You mean my studies as a pianist or in the class of Valery Ivko?
Your studies as a pianist.
Pianist. No, actually, no. I studied in Donetsk, and basically, no, we played no contemporary music. Like the most contemporary author might be Prokofiev or Shostakovich or Hindemith sometimes. Mm-hmm. So, no, I started playing contemporary music in 2013 because I felt the need. I felt that I cannot consider myself a professional musician if I don't play contemporary music. So I was actually curious, and I was, I merely knew that I have to do it.
So why is that? Because pianists, of course, have a tremendous repertoire. It's probably the largest repertoire of any instrument, except possibly the violin. It's not like you have any lack of pieces to play. I mean, you could just play 18th and 19th century music, and that would be enough. So why the need to play contemporary repertoire as well?
Just because of what I just said, because we live in the 21st century, so it's only fair to play the music of today. So to give the voice of to our contemporaries.
Well, I have to thank you for doing that, because I've been among the beneficiaries of this. And one of the things that struck me when I first started working with you was the extraordinary intensity that you brought to bear upon your interpretations. Like, there was a feeling of total identification with what you might describe as the spiritual content of the music. And that goes far beyond the question of putting the right notes in the right place. And one thing that has often disturbed me about the way contemporary music is often performed is that we have the impression that as long as there aren't too many mistakes and the rhythms are correct, then the performer has done their job. A lot of the time, I'm exaggerating somewhat, because of course there are lots of wonderful gifted performers that don't approach things this way. But in a professional sense, though, very often there's a certain pressure to get into the rehearsal and work efficiently and deliver a correct performance of the piece. But it's actually quite rare, especially in an ensemble setting, not to mention an orchestral setting, that the performers would seek to go a lot farther than that.
Thank you for saying so, first of all. Thank you for your music, and it was for us always I don't say pleasure to work, because the meaning of it is not Mozart or Vivaldi, so it's sometimes like more tragic and more dramatic, but so it's not, doesn't fit into the concept of pleasure, but
it might for some people, you never know.
So, but it enriched us as musicians and as human beings, the contact with your music. So, and speaking about ensemble, yes, I think all of us are like this. All of us are united, because I guess every musician of ensemble is a person who is seeking the meaning, who is searching for the sense of what we do. Starting from our conductor, Luigi Gaggero. So this, I think this is why it works, because all of us search the meaning.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely what makes it so powerful and unique. And those are, of course, for a composer, extraordinary experiences to have. So I have to say also, the times that I was in Kyiv, I was really struck by the number of people that were attending the concerts. And attending the concerts with extraordinary enthusiasm also. I mean, there was an electric feeling of enthusiasm at all of those events that really struck me. That's something I have to wonder why. I have to wonder why, because I spoke with some Ukrainian composition students, some young students on my last trip, and they told me that their professors were still from the Soviet era, and those professors were not particularly interested in 20th century music, and that really wasn't the focus of their training. That it was more, what would you say? It was more focused on the techniques of the past, I suppose. So where does that enthusiasm come from? Where, because, you know, the last concert I had in Kyiv, there were at least 400 people there, and just the most extraordinary interest in something that cannot have been, you know, a familiar experience for the people in the audience. So why do you think that is?
You know, I'm not into the social studies, so I can respond only for myself, I guess, because people need it. So I can speak for myself. I study new music, I study contemporary, I study music of the past and of the present, because I need it, because it makes, I don't know how to explain, because it is a way to study also your history and to study your past and your present present to understand where you are and who you are. So it's the way of knowing the reality. And maybe better than reading news or watching, I don't know, whatever.
Well, it's another type of reality, isn't it? The American poet Ezra Pound had a line about this. He said, literature is news that stays news. And I think that's a good definition of art in general. Music is, is news, but it's news that stays new. It's not just what you read in the newspaper that day. It's more enduring. But there's something, in a great work of art, there's a kind of enduring freshness that never dies. That's something that I think is really remarkable. You know, when you play a great piece of music, even if it's 400 years old, that feeling of freshness reemerges every time it's played, if it's played with a real sense of engagement. So I want to hear more then about your studies in Ukraine. And I'm really interested also in how you managed to make the jump from being a student to being a professional, and a very remarkable professional with a successful international career now. So maybe we could talk a little bit about that, because your career has taken you quite a lot outside of Ukraine. Was there a point at which you decided you would expand your professional aims in that sense, or did it just happen sort of naturally?
Thank you. No, I don't think I have a successful international career now, so I just do what I do, and I lived and worked in my hometown until basically the war started. So when it was not possible anymore to work there, I went away. Thanks to help of my friends also, and thanks to help of my teacher, Valery Ivko, and all our class, because we were united and we decided to go away together, all of us together. So that was our decision that we have taken, all of us, to go there where it would be possible to continue to make music. And then the important page, as we know, is the Ukh Ensemble Kiev. So this is something which for us, I think for many of us musicians of the ensemble, became a center of our attention and a center of a priority, where you try to give the best of your quality, best a lot of your time to really build up something which is yours, which is what we do.
Yeah, so for listeners who may not be familiar with that, Dina is talking about the Ukho Ensemble, that's UKHO, and of course we'll put links in the podcast description for anybody who wants to see the videos, but I can certainly say, having worked with the ensemble on several occasions and also having heard many of the interpretations and the CDs, that it is one of the finest ensembles of its kind in the world, absolutely. And there's actually a series of Ukho Ensemble CDs available on the Kairos label, including this one, Iridescent Notation, which features Dina as a soloist. And I mention that not out of any form of self-publicity, but really in order to make a case for the qualities of this remarkable ensemble, which, again, is an absolute treasure. So, of course, with the tragic events that are occurring at the moment, it's very difficult to say what the future looks like. But Are you in touch with your colleagues from the UHO ensemble right now? What do you think is going to happen?
No one knows, but we are going to win. Ukraine is going to win and rebuild and be prosperous. And we are going to make music again.
I'm in touch with many of the musicians from the ensemble. And of course, it's a time of great concern for me as well. And all I can say, of course, is that I hope this is over soon. I hope it's over soon, and that we'll be able to do that. We'll be able to continue doing what we had started doing. So what sort of repertoire are you working on at the moment? What are the things that you are playing currently, and what are the things that you would like to play? And what do you imagine yourself doing over the next few years, if you can look ahead that far right now?
Right now, as I said, I'm in Genova, and I work in opera theater. Yeah. And so currently we work on Manon Lescaut by Puccini. So that's my life for the next month until the end of March. And no, I don't build up the big plans now, because I don't feel like planning now.
Yeah. I can imagine that this sort of situation would shorten your time horizon. You can't imagine 6 months or a year ahead. You're sort of focused on the day-to-day, maybe 1 week to the next.
I started to play with some musicians here, with my colleagues in the theater. So we are searching. We would like to find occasions to play. Mm-hmm. So, but it's... For now, it's only like drafts, it's only projects, it's only the ideas. No, they didn't really take form yet.
Yeah. Well, it's early. This hasn't been going on for very long, although it feels like an eternity. Okay, so I'd also like to hear more about the way music is structured in Ukraine. Not only the institutions for learning, but also the way the orchestras and ensembles and so on are run. Because, of course, in Western Europe, you have a model of state sponsorship where ensembles and orchestras and all of the infrastructure for music, for classical and contemporary music, is to a greater or lesser extent supported by the state. So and that includes, of course, the conservatories and to some extent the universities as well. How does that look in Ukraine? If you want to be a performer, do you study at a university, in a conservatory, an academy? What does that look like? And what does the training look like? Is it academic training? Is it practical training?
Yeah, it's a conservatory, musical school. Then in most cities, in big Ukrainian cities, there is 10 years school, a phenomenon which... combines a school and a college. So institution where you study for 10 years. And then afterwards you go directly to the music academy. Then there are a postgraduate studies also, PhD.
Okay, and then what? What happens when you graduate? How does the situation look for a young Ukrainian musician beginning their career? Because certainly in Britain or France or Germany, there's a certain amount of anxiety for a lot of young people when they begin their careers. You never know what's going to happen, if you're going to be able to find a position somewhere or be able to find work. How does that look for a Ukrainian musician?
It looks tough. Yeah, not everyone finds a job by the profession that one studied. So it's a problem.
Well, I suppose in that sense, it's like anywhere. But I think there is one difference, though, maybe, and you can tell me what you think about this, but when I was in Kyiv, I was struck by the fact that the music world seemed to be less regimented than it is in Europe, which is to say that if there was a rehearsal from 2 to 5, for example, you don't necessarily start at 2 and stop at 5. If you need to take some more time to work on the piece, then that can happen. And that doesn't really happen very much in Western Europe, I have to say, because things are very, very rigid, very, very rigidly planned. And if you're stopping at five, you really stop at five. It doesn't matter what sort of shape the piece is in. But it seemed to me in Kyiv that if you needed to stay an extra hour or two or three, then the musicians invariably were eager to stay for as long as they needed to in order to get the piece sounding the way they wanted it.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. Because, so we come back to the beginning of our talk, because what we do, I take the liberty to respond for all of us, but I think that everyone will agree. So I permit myself that we are working for the result. So we are working to for the meaning, once again, of what we do. So it's not about ours. I mean, it's against, in a final account, this stopping at five works against you, because then you will have this CD for the rest of your life. So you want it to be to be as good as you can do. So this is something what you do, where you put your soul, your signature, your name, your everything. So yeah,
this is how I feel about it too. It's sometimes hard to convince other people that that's something worth pursuing. But well, if I'm working on something and you know, there's a sense that you want it to be everything that it possibly can be. And if that means that you have to stay up all night, or if that means that you have to work a few more days, then you do that, because the work of art has the potential to be, I don't know if permanent is the right word, but as permanent as anything that we may have access to as humans. It has that potential. It doesn't mean that all artworks will survive indefinitely, of course, and many of them will be forgotten or destroyed. But the potential is there for that to happen. And that changes the way you approach the work. At least it does for me. So is there anything that you'd like to say to viewers who might be watching this in North America or Western Europe about the situation that is unfolding in Ukraine? Something that they might not know, that might not be on the news, from somebody who, of course, is from there.
I would like to say thank you to everyone who will listen to us. And also I would like to invite our listeners to listen to Ukrainian music and to listen to Lik Domer. And I will send you the link, so maybe we'll write in the comments. So I will send you these files. So for those who know Ukrainian music already, I would like to invite to listen to it again. And for those who maybe never heard before, to discover. Like to mention the vocal tradition, because so in Ukrainian music, for me, there are two fields, so the most important, which describe best. So it's the folk music and vocal music. So vocal also, because the Ukrainian language is melodic, because of it's cantabile, let's say. So it gives the really possibilities of being sung. So yes. listen to liturgy by Lesya Dechko, listen to folk songs, listen to choirs by Hanna Gavrilets, a Ukrainian composer who also passed away shortly after the war has begun. Yes.
Yes, we'll include links for these composers and performers in the video, so anybody who wants to hear these things can, of course. Okay. And I'd like to mention also the contemporary Ukrainian composer Maxim Kolomietz, who I had hoped also to speak with on the podcast, but he is in Kiev right now, and his circumstances, as you can imagine, are quite difficult. So we weren't able to arrange to do an interview, but in my opinion, he's one of the finest composers in Ukraine right now, certainly in the younger generation. And I think his music should be much more widely known. So I'll also put a link in there for some of Maxim's music. Are there any other contemporary Ukrainian composers that you might like to mention?
Yes, I'd like to mention Oleksiy Voitenko, who is a composer and researcher and an incredibly noble person. And now he is arranging a catalog of Ukrainian music with a team of, with a team. But I mean, he's the brain of that team. So he dedicates a lot of time really to systematize and to put in order our heritage. I would mention my favorite piece of his, which is the music of Eric Zahn, and it is on YouTube.
Also, for people who may not know the musical heritage of Ukraine very well, what about 19th and early 20th century composers? Who are some figures that we might like to discover for those who don't already know?
Speaking about 20th century, it's difficult because from the 60s there is a quality shift in Ukrainian music, because when Stalin died, so there was a sort of spring of revival of new possibilities that opened up. It's a famous generation of the 60s. Leonid Grabovsky, Vitaly Godzatsky, Valentin Silvestrov, which would be, I think, the most famous name that is known in Europe also. This is the generation of the 60s. And in the beginning of the 20th century, it was mostly tragic because most of our Ukrainian composers were persecuted and physically eliminated by the Soviets. So the example that maybe everyone knows is Mykola Leontovich, the famous author of a song which in Europe and in America is known as Carol of the Bells.
How did things change after 1991 in Ukraine for music?
Oh, they changed for good. I can't compare because I was born in 88, so I was three years old. But I might imagine what was before, and that before it was not like this, by far not like this. And after 91, we have a blossoming of festivals, of ensembles, of initiatives, of composers, of performers, of whatever. So every big city in Ukraine, the festival of contemporary music, but also classical music, it was blossoming really. And also ensembles, I might mention just a few of them, like Ricochet, Nova Muzika v Ukraine. So Ensemble Nostri Temporis, where Maxim played for many years. And then starting from 2015, our Ruch Ensemble Kiev. I mean, it did not come on a soil where nothing was before. So these processes, yes, indeed, they started in 1991, the process of raising, of waking up.
Mm-hmm. Right, so you're from a generation that didn't know the Soviet period directly.
Yes, I didn't know it directly, but I can imagine.
Well, this work that has been done and the ground that has been laid for things like the Ucho Ensemble, of course, I think is very, very strong. And if one can be optimistic in such a terrible time, then my feeling is that the ensemble will not be broken, and this is going to continue. Thank you, Dina, for taking the time to talk with me today.
Thank you.
I'm going to, again, there's going to be a whole series of links in the video if you'd like to hear Dina's performances with the UHO ensemble or some of the composers she mentioned. All of that is going to be there. And I'm also going to include in the video a link or several links to ways that you can help Ukraine right now. For anybody that feels that this is a situation that cannot be allowed to continue, there are ways to help. And I would certainly urge anybody who's watching this video to do so. And all I can say is I hope from the bottom of my heart that this stops very, very soon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.